Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and today we have a busy docket. First, the Harvey Weinstein case continues. More drama there. Is this guy going to walk? The defense is certainly giving the jury something to talk about. Second, the state of Florida is not going forward with the death penalty on Sheila Warren's homicide case. Third, let's talk entrapment. Fourth, how about some dying declarations? And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. We know you have a lot of choices out there and a limited time, and so we are very thankful that you take your time to watch us here at Crime Talk. Thank you. If you haven't already done so, we would please ask you to subscribe, hit that little like button, leave us a comment, and always hit that little bell so that you get notifications of when we put out a new video or we go live. First on the docket, yes, more Harvey Weinstein drama. Is this guy going to walk? Well, you know, the defense is certainly giving the jury something to talk about. Now, let's face it. We've told you, we've talked about it. Harvey Weinstein is the epitome of the poster boy for Me Too, okay? He may be a pig. He is a pig. Let's face it. Let's call it what it is. Being a pig doesn't necessarily mean that you're a rapist. And the defense, and as we talked about over the last couple of days, what did I tell you? Look out for the emails, and man, are they coming back. Why? Because the defense isn't up there just trying to say, well, isn't it possible? Isn't it reasonably degree of some certainty that you could have done this, and this is what you really meant? You have the complaining witnesses own words. And guess what? They have to own them. And in this particular case, the complaining witness is not coming across very well. Now, I will be the first to admit, I am not in the courtroom. I am not seeing what the juror reactions might be. But you have to think it can't be, oh, this poor little woman. Now, one of the complaining witnesses in this case is Miss Mann. The prosecution tried to make her out to be, you know, this poor little girl from, you know, Washington State Dairy Farm off to the big city and not familiar with the big city ways. Well, it turns out she is pretty sophisticated and she is quite well-versed in those big city ways. Let's take a look at what they had to talk about today. So as we talked about yesterday, the complaining witness, Jessica Mann, literally broke down in tears yesterday, could not compose herself, so the courts ordered a recess for about 10 minutes. After the break, Miss Mann was still unable to compose herself, so the court recessed for the end of the day. Well, cross-examination resumed on the third day. Obviously, if Miss Mann had not shown up, she would have not returned for her cross-examination, and either a mistrial would have been declared or the judge could have struck all of her testimony from the record and the jury could not consider it in any way. Anyway, the cross-examination continued, and they went on through these emails on cross-examination where they talked about the last encounter that she had with Mr. Harvey Weinstein back in 2006, right about the time that his mother died. Testimony came out that Mr. Weinstein's mother had passed away in about November of 2016. Apparently, Mr. Weinstein's assistant stated that he needed to be consoled and that he would be at a hotel room. She was going to go there to console him, and when she arrived, Mr. Weinstein was naked on the bed and wanted to do something sexual. Now, one of the defense attorneys, Miss Rotuno, has beat up on Miss Mann for the last 3 days now and has continued to go over the what Miss Mann refers to as the complex off-again, on-again relationship. And Ms. Mann is having difficulty explaining to the jury why she maintained a relationship with the man that she says attacked her. Now, Ms. Mann and the prosecutor have tried to say that she's just a naive woman from a dairy farm in Washington State, and Mr. Weinstein exploited all of this entire situation for his own sexual demands. Now, Ms. Mann says that after the first incident with Mr. Weinstein in 2013, where that she alleges that she was sexually assaulted, that the following morning she asked and had breakfast Mr. Weinstein and with her friend and two friends in the film industry. And over the course of the next 4 years, Ms. Mann continued to have a sexual relationship with Mr. Weinstein, and she admitted to that on a cross-examination. One of her last communications was in 2017, where she asked him to take her to a dinner after a breakup of one of her boyfriends. Additionally, she asked for him to be a reference to gain membership into an exclusive club at one point. And on cross-examination, Ms. Rotuno said that you wanted the person that you said sexually assaulted you to be your sponsor to get into this exclusive club. And all Ms. Mann could say is, that's the man that raped me. So between going to his hotel room to console him, asking for letters of references from him, and to continue engage in what she even characterizes as a consensual relationship, Ms. Mann did not do herself any favors on the witness stand. And the jury will ultimately have to decide, but based upon what I've seen, based upon this testimony, Mr. Weinstein is in the game. He has a shot at this point. And through these emails, the complaining witness's own words, the defense has been able to show, which is what they stated in opening statement, that Mr. Weinstein, yes, may be a bad guy. You may not like him. He may be just a pig. But guess what? These people engaged in sexual relationships for their own reasons, to advance their own careers, to gain something of benefit. The best thing any attorney can do in opening statement is to only state what you believe you are going to be able to prove. Because if you don't back up what you state in opening, the jury will remember it and they will punish you. And if it looks like the prosecution has basically tried to spin this whole thing into something that it is not, they're going to get crucified. Mr. Weinstein's attorneys said, this is what you're going to see. And it was consensual on both parts because each wanted something. Mr. Weinstein wanted the sexual gratification, and they wanted to be friends and associates with Mr. Weinstein. These jurors are going to have a tough job based upon this information. And what's even more curious is that the elected DA in this particular matter showed up in court today. Now, I don't think he was showing up because he was there to take a victory lap. I'm thinking he was there to see how bad things were going with their star witness. And remember, the elected DA in this particular case was roundly criticized because he did not prosecute Harvey Weinstein years ago when these allegations came out, but only did so after the whole Me Too movement came about. Now, that district attorney, you know, he may have some explaining to do, because frankly, so far, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. This case would have made a heck of a lot more sense when these allegations came out versus doing it years and years down the road when it looks like it's a political witch hunt. It just looks bad. We'll see how that comes out. I think they're into like week 3 or 4, but they think it's only going to go 5 weeks. Any other jurisdiction, I don't know what it is with New York, California. Can these people not do a trial in less than 2 weeks for a serious, serious case? I don't know what it is, but it seems like it takes forever. Next on the docket, let's talk about the case of Sheila Keen Warren. She is the 56-year-old woman charged in Florida of killing Marlene Warren. Now, what makes this somewhat of an interesting case is that the prosecution has decided that they don't believe they're now going to go with the death penalty. From what we can tell, Sheila Warren had no prior criminal history. Now, in 1990, it's alleged that she was having an affair with Michael Warren, the then husband of Marlene Warren. And Marlene Warren was killed in a somewhat grotesque manner. According to witness statements and investigators, Miss Marlene Warren opened the door and greeted a person wearing an orange wig, a red bulb nose, gloves, and a smile painted on with white makeup, basically a clown makeup face. And this clown held two balloons and flowers in one hand and a pistol in the other and ultimately shot Miss Marlene Warren in the face, and then the clown ran away. Sheila Warren was the prime suspect, person of interest at that particular time, but they could not make the case. Back in 2017, DNA evidence led police back to Sheila Warren, and she was ultimately arrested and charged in a grand jury indictment with first-degree murder. Prosecutor at that time said that they would seek the death penalty. Frankly, this didn't seem like a death penalty case when you have one person, one murder, no true aggravators under most of the statutes that would require a death penalty, like prior convictions, shooting of a police officer, nothing along those lines. Well, ultimately, Sheila would marry Marlene's husband, Michael, because obviously Sheila and Michael were having an affair, which obviously would point certain people to believe that, in fact, Sheila had something to do with this particular case. Now that the district attorney has taken death off the table, hopefully the trial can start in May of 2020 as it's scheduled to do so. Miss Warren has been literally sitting in custody now for over 2 years waiting for this matter to start. Death penalty cases take a lot longer, not because the facts are usually that much more difficult, but whenever you put death on the table, you have to do mitigation. You have to do a bunch of research, and you hopefully have to go and try to convince the district attorney not to pursue death for your client. It's unclear if that mitigation that may have been presented is what led the district attorney to change their mind, or whether they have fact, proof, evidence issues that they cannot prove. We'll see how it goes. And frankly, this will be a good case, and hopefully Florida will televise it and we can bring it to you. Next on the docket, let's talk entrapment. Now, old Dominic Calderon, our dumb criminal contestant of the day yesterday, brought a lot of comments. All right. And for those who did not see it, Mr. Dominic Calderon was riding his bike home, whereupon he was stopped and talked to a woman on the street. The woman on the street turned out to be a police officer operating a sting to arrest Johns soliciting people for prostitution. Make a long story short, Mr. Dominic Calderon didn't have the money and said, "Hey, I'd like to be with you, but I don't have the $80 that you're asking for. So why don't you give me your number and I can give you a call later." Well, the officer then asks what's in the bag, and he says, "Well, that's my hamburger I'm taking home from work." She goes, "Well, why don't you give me the hamburger and we can, apply it towards the payment." And next thing you know, he was arrested for solicitation of prostitution. Now, a lot of people said, that is entrapment. Why can the police do that? All right. Well, hey, we thought this was a good teachable moment to explain entrapment. Okay. I can only think of one case off the top of my head where entrapment has ever worked. And that was the case of DeLorean. Remember, Mr. DeLorean was the guy that came up with the DeLorean car, the one that they used in Back to the Future, right? Well, he got popped for selling a bunch of drugs, or gonna sell a bunch of drugs, because he needed the money for his auto manufacturing company. It was on videotape, and guess what? He was walked. Why? Because they said it was entrapment. Okay? I can tell you, I have never run an entrapment defense. Okay? Why? Entrapment is what they refer to as an affirmative defense. And an affirmative defense is a defense that says, yeah, I did it, but I was legally excused for doing it. The most classic example of an affirmative defense is self-defense. Yeah, I killed the dead guy, but the dead guy deserved killing, okay? Because I was defending myself and or somebody else, and I was in fear of death or serious bodily harm, all right? But you have to admit the elements of the offense. Yeah, I killed that dude, okay? So entrapment is the same type of thing. It's an affirmative offense where you say, yes, I committed the crime, okay? Usually not a good defense unless you have something really solid, okay? And entrapment rarely never ever works. I frankly don't know of anyone who's ever prevailed on an entrapment defense. Because you have to be able to show that you are somehow not predisposed to doing the deal, okay? So, for example, a classic case where it comes up is usually drug cases, or kind of like the solicitation case of Mr. Calderon. But let's use a drug deal, for example. Undercover cop comes up to an individual and says, hey, do you know where I can get a 20? And the guy says, man, I don't know. I can't help you. And the cop says, man, I really help you out. This is an emergency. I really need something. The guy goes, okay, fine. I know a guy. And he goes over to gets the guy, and he brings the drugs back to him, gives it to the cop, and guess what? They arrest the guy in the middle, and they arrest the guy for selling the dope. The guy in the dope says, man, I wouldn't have done it, but the guy gave me this sad story. Well, yeah, but have you ever done this before? Well, yeah, maybe once or twice. I got a couple of drug convictions for selling dope, blah, 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 right? So they have to show that he never would have done it but for the persuasion of the officers to do something. So let me just read an instruction. This is the instruction that would go to a jury. And obviously, any good defense attorney is going to read the elemental instructions to see if it even applies to his particular case. And so to get an instruction like this, you usually have to have your client testify, unless it's on video. And having your client testify is usually not a great idea. But it says, for entrapment, the evidence presented in this case has raised the affirmative defense of entrapment as a defense, and insert the defendant's name, and it would read, the defendant's conduct was legally authorized if he is a person who, but for the inducement offered, would not have conceived of or engaged in the conduct of the sort induced, and he engaged in the prescribed conduct because he was induced to do so by the law enforcement official seeking to obtain evidence for the purpose of prosecution and not as a result of his or her own predisposition. And fourth, the methods used were more persuasive than merely affording him an opportunity to commit an offense, even if such opportunity was coupled with representations or inducements calculated to overcome his fear of detection. The prosecution has the burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant's conduct was not legally authorized by the defense. In order to meet the burden of proof, the prosecution must disprove beyond a reasonable doubt that at least one of the above numbered conditions. All right. So what does that really mean? Once again, you have to be able to show that the person absolutely, positively never would have engaged in such conduct but for the inducement. Normally, it's like, hey, I need you to go rob a bank. I do it myself, but you know, I can't leave my dying kids, but my kids are going to die if you don't do it. It's almost like a duress argument, and I'm telling you, it just rarely ever works. It's on there. When anybody gets in trouble, they always cite entrapment, but it's rarely ever used. So hopefully that explains it. Hopefully it helps as well. Next on the docket, let's talk dying declarations. Yesterday, we put up the suicide note of Fotos Doulos, where he said that Michelle Trukonis and his friend and former attorney, Kent Mwahini, had nothing to do with anything related to the disappearance of his wife, and they should be let go. Well, I'm sure the district attorney said, well, that clears it all up now. I guess we're just going to have to dismiss. Yeah, no. All right. So a couple of people in the comments said, well, isn't this a dying declaration? No. Let me tell you what a dying declaration is. A dying declaration is when somebody actually, well, let's just take a look at the definition. As we know, because we've talked about this before, hearsay. Hearsay is an out-of-court statement made by someone other than the person on the witness stand testifying, right? Because people on the stand can only testify as to what they saw, what they heard, what they observed, what they smelled, etc. They can't usually talk about what somebody else said. All right, there's exceptions to that. Now, one of the exceptions is a dying declaration under the exceptions to the hearsay rule. And that exception is basically, that statement is as if the declarant, the person making the statement, is actually aware that they're going to die. They believe they're going to die. And then it can come in as a statement as to what they said. Now, under common law, the person had to actually die. All right. But things have changed. The rules have been relaxed. And now it comes in both civil and criminal trials. And simply the people had to actually believe they're going to die. And they may have survived, but they still can try to bring that statement in. You could also try to get it in as an excited utterance, which is another exception to hearsay rule, which is for another lesson one day. Now, I can tell you, in 25 years of practicing law, criminal defense, I've only had two occasions where a dying declaration was possibly coming in. Let me give you an example of the first. Client and wife have an argument. Wife leaves, husband gets in the car, drives the car. She's walking down the street. He gets closer with the car. She runs a little faster, gets a little closer with the car, maybe nudging her a little bit with the car. Ultimately, wife jumps fence of house and husband then drives through fence, pinning wife against neighbor's house, actually pinning the car next to the house, actually moves the house off of the foundation just a little bit. People in the house come outside, notice that the car is there, put the car in reverse, move it out, call the police immediately. Woman is in extreme pain. She believes she's dying. Everybody thinks she's dying because her leg is just about cut off. So she's laying there on the ground. They've removed the car. She's laying there, extreme pain. Her leg is just nearly cut off from being pinned between the house and the car. And the paramedics are there. And the police are there. And they're saying, victim, what happened? Who did this to you? And the victim's laying on the ground. She's like, I'm dying. I'm dying. I know I'm dying. Tell my mom I love her. And they say, again, who did this to you? My husband did this to me. My husband did this to me. Okay? That is a dying declaration. She actually reasonably believed, and everyone around her reasonably believed, that she was going to die. And they were asking her questions, right? And it would be somewhat of a travesty of justice if they couldn't get that information in to establish identification. Because up to that point, they would have had no idea who, in fact, had done this. So that is a dying declaration. Writing a suicide note is not a dying declaration. And Mr. Conus and Mr. Mwahini have no chance of getting that letter into evidence to say, look, Mr. Fotos Doulos cleared this whole thing up. He would know best because we think he did something if, in fact, his wife is, in fact, deceased. And he said we had nothing to do with it. Case over. Never coming in. All right. So hopefully that explains dying declarations. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. I do not know what it is. It must be a trend in the drug subculture these days to label your drugs. As you may have recalled, we had a dumb criminal contestant a few weeks ago who was stopped and had a bag that said dope bag, my dope bag, or something to that effect. Well, guess what? It's happened again. All right. And when you start doing things that other people are doing, you certainly may come close to qualifying for dumb criminal contestant of the week. Well, you may not win it, but at least you're a dumb criminal contestant of the day. So Ian Simmons, 34, was pulled over with his passenger, Joshua Reinhardt, and they were pulled over. And to make a long story short, the police somehow decided to search their vehicle. And what did they find? Yes, a bag that says bag full of drugs. And of course, what did the police do? Open it. And what do they find but a pharmacy full of narcotics, cocaine, ecstasy, meth, fentanyl, and GHB. So needless to say, these are not usually over-the-counter type of medications. And so everyone's arrested. Now, the defense is going to have a tough time depending on why they're there. Obviously, you know, the defense is going to say, hey, this is an illegal stop. Once the basis of the stop has been resolved, you have to move on. Why are these people looking in bags? What are they looking for? How did they get in there? And just because it says bag full of drugs, maybe it's bag full of prescription drugs. Why do the police need to look into that bag? It could be completely a legitimate purpose. In the words of Freud, right? Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Maybe it's just a bag full of legal drugs. And why are the police putting their big fingers and nose into that bag in the first place? But that's okay. Our two contestants, Ian and Joshua, are our dumb criminal contestants of the day. Which brings us to another good point. How are the police going to prove that the bag found in the car was either Ian or Joshua's? Well, normally they don't have to, but the prosecution has to prove that each party knew what was in the bag and that they knew the drugs were in fact illegal. It doesn't necessarily matter that the drugs were not on either person. It simply has to be within one's dominion and control. So if each of them could exercise control over that bag, they both can be charged with the possession of the bag. And depending on the bag and the collection of bags therein, they could be charged with possession with intent to distribute. So, have a great day. Thanks for watching. Hopefully you learned something. Oh, and one more thing. And finally, the other day, I told you about the mug that the lovely Miss Kristen got for me. And it has all the great cases, all right? Gideon V. Wainwright. That's the case that said everybody's entitled to a criminal defense attorney. Little old man in Florida writes a pro se petition and goes all the way to the Supreme Court pro se and says, I want a lawyer. And the Supreme Court says, you know what? Everyone charged with a crime where you're facing incarceration should get a lawyer. We have the Marbury versus Madison, Plessy v. Ferguson, Gibbons v. Ogden, United States v. Nixon, Griswold v. Connecticut. Now, I said at the time that if you supposedly pour hot water into this, that the winning case should come and be highlighted. Well, I was told I needed to do it, that I failed in my YouTube duties by not doing it. So we are going to do it right now with the assistance of Kyle. He has provided a hot cup of water, and I have the mug in my hand, and we're going to pour the hot water in and see what, in fact, happens without spilling it all over myself and the desk and see how long it takes. While we're waiting for this to happen, I'm going to use this time to invite you to perhaps look at some Crime Talk merchandise, like a mug, like Let's Talk About It, or a shirt, or something else. Hit the little link below, it takes you to the little store, and bam, you can get it, and it'll be with you in a matter of days. Don't be shy about going to our Facebook or Instagram pages. We have all those linked below. And if you really, really, really like us, you can go to Patreon, and we just don't ask for money. We give you free stuff. And if you go to Patreon, we give you stuff in exchange for, well, you giving us money. But we just don't beg for money. We actually give you something in exchange for that. And even the top level, you can spend time with me personally talking about it. But you don't have to. It's completely up to you. All right, so I don't know if it's because we don't have enough hot water or what, but nothing seems to be changing here on the mug. I don't think it's hot enough. I don't think it's hot enough, Kyle. Maybe we'll try it again tomorrow. Maybe we'll just do a before and after and show it to you, because this, frankly, isn't hot enough. Anyway, have a great day. Thanks for watching. Talk to you tomorrow.